There we go. Okay. Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, September 28th, 2019. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Well, thank you for joining us today. Jim and I do this the second and fourth Saturdays of every month. And, as we anticipate our RV, Jim and I thought it would be a good idea to continue to teach you about how to properly use trusts. Because we don't know what you don't know, we have invited you to ask whatever questions you have. So please raise your hand, and we will answer questions as we go. In the meantime, I'll talk. And so will Jim. So let's see here. You know, as you know, the purpose of the contract trust is asset protection and anonymity. Your mother lode trust is the one that initially owns all of the assets, in this case, your foreign currency. This is only a generic name given to describe this account. It should be considered level one of your trust organization, the original account where your dinar and dong and zim was deposited. This trust functions much like a trunk of a tree with deep roots, and therefore the mother lode should be the most secure private account that you set up. Okay, before I go any further, we do have a question. Good morning, McKinley.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you today?
I'm real good, thank you.
Have a question?
Yes. Concerning the EIN number and all of the trust that we will have to have, that we want, how do you know which ones will have an EIN number and which ones do not require it?
We are of the opinion that that is your decision. If it's going to be a trust that has a bank account attached to it, it needs an EIN.
Okay.
If you are putting a vehicle into a trust, it doesn't really need an EIN because it probably doesn't need a bank account, but then again, you may want to. Let's say you're planning on purchasing an $80,000 car. You might want to fund a brand new trust with $100,000 in it so that way you have leftover money to pay for insurance and maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. But that is really your decision whether or not you're going to get an EIN.
Okay. Now, question number two. I'm having difficulty understanding how to go to a lawyer and state my case.
Hang on just one second. Let me get rid of this.
Sure.
Of course, this person knows that I'm on this call, right? Okay, go ahead, McKinley. I'm sorry.
Okay. I have an issue. This is my issue. We're trying to do a hypothetical in a serious situation. It's like, I need a lawyer, I need an accountant, I need a CPA. Okay, I don't really know how to present myself to those persons as being a serious person about something that's going to happen when I know it's going to happen within myself, but how do I convince them that it's going to happen? And I need it. And they'll be able to help me defend it if I need them.
From what I understand, while we are at our exchange, we will be introduced to, I don't know, relationship managers, wealth managers, whatever. The relationship manager especially should be able to introduce you to a team of those people. You will be working with management companies. Those teams will be available to you.
Okay. You say relationship manager?
Yeah. That's somebody that's going to be your liaison with the bank.
Okay. And now, on the $500,000 limit on an account, there are two of us that will have, that are trustees, my wife and I. Now, does that mean that she can have $50,000 in her account and I can have $50,000 in mine, or is it a collective between the two of us we should have no more than $50,000?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about. I have said something
in the past. In our personal accounts.
Yeah, explain that more, a little more. Your personal accounts. Yes, I've explained. You probably want to keep it limited to $50,000. That's not a hard and fast rule. It's just reducing your exposure.
Okay.
So if anything does happen, for God forbid, for whatever reason, your exposure is only $50,000, not $150,000. Okay?
Well, it would just simply be $100,000, yeah. Okay, now taxes for the year end, which I have taxes from retirement, and there's no working income coming in. And then if there's any taxes, I don't think I will have acquired any trust taxes. So I just file my regular taxes with my regular person without exposing anything else.
Once again, you're going to be introduced to management teams, and they will provide you with CPAs and tax specialists to do that.
All right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, if anybody else has a question, please just chime in. In the meantime, I'll continue. So the main function of the Motherlode Trust is to fund secondary trusts via exchanges of either currency or money for certificates. We will have this procedure explained with the necessary minutes on the website. It's not terribly involved, but it's more than I want to get into in this call. If you have previously opened a bank account for your Motherlode Trust, we suggest you open new accounts at your exchange appointment. You may want to consider opening another Motherlode account at a different bank so that you not have all your eggs in one basket. You may use the same trust. Simply take the abstract of your trust at the new bank and open a new account. When moving money from one bank to another, it is recommended to use a cashier's check rather than wiring. That way you avoid being exposed to internet airwaves. And this is where those clean and clear certificates are going to come from. If you want to transfer like $1 million into a secondary Motherlode account at a different bank, they're probably going to want to know where the money came from. You will probably be under an NDA and you can't tell them, but if you have a clean and clear certificate, you should be fine. Do you agree with that, Jim? Jim, are you there? I guess I lost Jim. Hang on, folks. Where? Go back here. I'm sorry, and my computer is not cooperating at the moment. There he is. No, that's Thomas. Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Did you hear what I said?
No, I just got a busy fast signal and everything went dead. I had to go get my other phone. I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay. All right. What I was saying, when moving money into another bank, like a secondary Motherlode account, rather than keeping everything in one bank, you may want to open an account, say, in a different bank. But this is where the clean and clear certificates come from, in that if you go, let's say you go to Chase, let's say you originally are working with HSBC and you want to open a secondary account at Chase, you want to open an account for $1 million with a cashier's check, you probably need a clean and clear certificate because you won't be able to tell them because of your NDA where you got the money. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree with that. And in fact, when you go to the bank, no matter what bank you go to, your first one, you want to get enough clean and clear certificates to serve you for at least a year. I mean, I want to ask for at least 25.
Yeah, me too. Okay. So let's go back to where we were. Never purchase anything from this account. You do not have bank cards or checks attached to this account, and never do online banking from this account. Most large depositors, which I'm assuming will be most of us, will be assigned a private banker and a relationship manager. When you want to move money from your Motherlode trust to your secondary trust, which is level 2 of your trust organization, call your personal banker and instruct him or her of the amount you want moved. Better still, if you're able to, simply walk into the bank and do it yourself. By keeping all communication of this account internal, you greatly reduce the risk of hackers penetrating into your accounts where the bulk of your money is held. Your Motherlode accounts should be kept extremely private, as its only trustees, as only its trustees, you, the signers of the account, the bank itself, and your personal banker should have knowledge of this level of your business dealings. And we have another question. Hang on. Good morning, Una. How are you doing today?
Hello, Sarah?
Yes.
Hi, this is Una. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just not clear on that clean and clear certificate that was just mentioned a while ago. So let me see. I had my accounts open, but then I closed them. And I'm suspecting I can reopen them at the exchange, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you actually going to open new account, brand new accounts?
Oh, brand new accounts. So where does the clean and clear certificate come in there?
Well, let's say we do our exchange. You got all this money sitting in your mother lode trust, and you want to fund a secondary trust, maybe take it to a different bank. So you need, when you do your exchange, you're going to ask for clean and clear certificates, which tells whomever you're giving it to that the bank is that the money is free of any criminal origin. Have I got that all right, Jim? Yeah,
you do. There's another step to that. The clean and clear certificates are going to be issued by the bank because they're going to guarantee the funds came from a currency. And so if you're going to do anything, like even go buy a new car and you want to cut a check, they're going to want to know that that check's good. They want to know that that's not criminal money. So that's where your clean and clear certificates may come in addition to going from bank to bank. If you're going to write a big check, you're going to have to verify that check. And that's what the clean and clear certificates are all about.
Okay, so your suggestion is anytime you're writing a check, especially a big one, I don't know what's the maximum or the cutoff, you get a clean and clear certificate with that money.
Well, it depends on how much you're going to write the check for. It's $5,000 or $10,000. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But if you're going to go write a check for, like Carol's example, $80,000 car, they're going to be wanting to know that that's good money. Because they get caught up in some type of a sting or a scam or something. So they want to know it's good, clean money. And I think that's where the certificates will come in for your everyday use. That's why I'm going to get so many of them. But predominantly, and primarily, you're going to be using these things when you go from bank to bank or from lending institution to a credit union, something like that. So they know that somebody else has done the due diligence, and they can rely on that due diligence to know that that money does not have a criminal origin.
Okay, I see. So there was something else that came to mind to ask regarding that, but I guess it will come back. I won't hold up the line.
Okay, all right.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, I'll take you off. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Thank you. All right, so let's see. So going back to your mother lode account. So you need to, when you do open this new account, flag all accounts as access restricted to essential bank personnel. I mean, some people say non-essential. That doesn't make sense to me. to me, access should be restricted to the essential bank personnel that need to see it for on your behalf. And tagged as non-test, non-training accounts. Access should be restricted to senior private banker, relationship manager, wealth manager only, whomever you're dealing with. Within your agreements, it should be stated that you are not to be contacted by anyone via phone, text, email, or mail other than the wealth manager or private banker with whom you decide to do business. That means no salesman, nobody. This is your contact info is strictly private and for his or her eyes only. Also, you want to specify that all new business account information is wiped from all front teller screens and assistant manager screens, etc., only accessible by the senior private banker, relationship manager, wealth manager. The account balance is to be masked. Specific business accounts will not be available online. If you choose to keep records of your banking structure and transactions at this level on a computer, make sure that you purchase a new computer that is never hooked up to the internet. If you ever go online with this computer, a good hacker now has access to your hard drive, and as they say, end of story. Be sure to back up all the information on a flash drive, which also should be kept in place of safety. You may want to consider placing this computer and all records, such as your flash drive, legal papers, and trust binders, in a home safe or bank vault. Okay, well, I think we're going to switch over to Jim now, because we're talking about the benefits of being your own trustee. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I'm going to take that for a second. Recently, I got a couple of calls from people, and evidently they got confused, or they listened to somebody that doesn't really know what they're talking about. I got a call yesterday by one of our people, and he says, well, I was just told that I should not be the trustee of my trust. I need to get my name off the trust, otherwise it would be taxable to my name. Well, that's not correct. Well, the first thing is you want to be the only person on that trust account. You want to make sure you're the only signer. I would never allow anybody else to be the trustee of my trust. I mean, you're just asking for trouble. So one of the benefits of the contract trust is that you can be the trustee of the trust. Let's put you in charge with no one between you and the money. It says here the exchanger-trustee relationship issue has been litigated in the federal court system numerous times. In the Encyclopedia of the U.S. Supreme Court, Report Number 5, supplement to the volume V as in Victor, 717-731, Section 4, Roman Numeral 4, Trustee, Paragraph C, persons who may be a trustee, it states, the legal title, possession and control of property may, by declaration of trust, be passed irrevocably from the grantor, the exchanger, to himself as trustee with the same effect as if the trustee receiving the conveyance had been another person. This contract trust provides a contractual agreement where the exchanger receives trust certificates evidencing the exchange of his property and can thus become eligible to be the named trustee. So that says pretty much everything. That's right from the law. So you should never have an issue with being the trustee of this thing. And even if you are the trustee, it's not your money. The trust is its own entity. You're simply the trustee. That's why I tell people, if you're going to sign something, sign as trustee, comma, and not as otherwise. That's a limiter. That lets them know that you only acted as a trustee, not in your personal capacity, only as a trustee. So I would sign James Knox, trustee, comma, and not as otherwise. That puts the onus on them to prove otherwise, and there's no way they can. Now, we just got another call a couple days ago. Another client recently had an issue with the Social Security Administration. They said that the money in the trust was his money and thus would impact his Social Security benefit. In this case, the folks at Social Security were way off base. The money belongs to the trust, not the individual. It has no bearing on Social Security. Liens were personal issues with the IRS. Again, the money does not belong to the individual, but to the trust. As trustee, you're the manager of the assets of the trust. I get Social Security. I've never had an issue. The contract trust is a separate lawful entity. None of the trustees shall have or possess any beneficial interest or equitable title in any of the property or assets of this trust organization. Neither shall they be personally liable, hereunder as partners or otherwise. To simply put it, the trustee is not responsible for the debts of the trust. And the trust is not responsible for the debts of the trustee. So those are very important things. Now, I'm going to segue here to something I've been really wanting to talk about. And this may hurt some feelings. So take your feelings off your cuff, off your arm. Just hear me out. We were never supposed to hear about this money. We were never, ever intended to know about this currency exchange. It's just a fluke that we found out about it.
Thank you, Internet.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when Bush signed that, he tried to make it kind of legal speak, but somebody figured it out. God bless them, whoever they were. The other thing that you have to understand is these trusts that you have, you were never supposed to find out about these either, and neither were Carol or I. You want to know the truth. These are for the very wealthy people. These are for the people of what they say, and their quote is, we are of substance. We are above you. Not. So we have two things going on right here that most people have never heard of, this type of a trust and this currency exchange. With that said, it's time for everybody to man or woman up and start studying and learning this stuff. This is an opportunity that you'll never, ever, ever, ever get again. Now, I will say one more thing about this. When I started in this business and started with this actual trust, my associate and I were getting $10,000 a trust. We had seminars. We'd invite people in, and we'd give them a half a day, and we'd buy them a really nice lunch. And then we'd come back to the table, come back to the conference room, and finish up. The deal was you get all this education for free, half a day's worth, and we'll take and buy you a good lunch. If you want to continue, you got to leave a check, cashier's check, for $10,000 next to your place at the table. We'll collect those as you eat. Those of you that do not leave a check behind, you're free to go home. That's exactly how we did this. So you see, there's value in what you have, a lot more value than you actually understand you're getting. The only reason we dropped the prices this low is because, frankly, most people could not afford it. You were not supposed to know about this stuff. So I'm encouraging you to read the trust. I had three or four people call me this week asking questions. Obviously, they didn't read the trust. It's only 10 pages long. Read the trust. Read it 5, 6, 10 times. Study the trust. Make notes. Spend some time on the website. There's just a plethora of knowledge there. I mean, there is, you know, Amjur Second. Everything you'd ever want to know about the law and trust is on our website. All the minutes, over 300 sample minutes are on the website. I'm encouraging everybody to get off your butt, start reading the stuff and studying it. You know, even though Carol and I spent a lot of time answering a lot of questions, that's not our job. Our job is to set you up with the documents and the information. We've done our job. Now you do your job. Learn this thing. This is going to be a life-altering experience. As we said last time, this is the foundation of your future life. This document, these trust documents are the foundation that you're going to be building the rest of your life and your kids' life and your kids' kids' lives on. Learn this thing. Don't expect us to be at your beck and call because, frankly, in about 5 or 6 months after this thing happens, you will not hear from me again. I'm going to retire.
What a concept.
So with that being said, if I hurt your feelings, too bad. You know, you have to take the responsibility on your shoulders to learn this stuff. We're here for you. We'll guide you. We've got the information. You just need to sit down, buckle down, and figure out what's going on. Okay, I'm going to get off my pedestal now, Carol.
Okay. Well, you know, Jim and I applaud all of you for having made the decision to come with us and join our little trust community. There's a plethora of information and disinformation on the Internet. Lots of other trusts, lots of other people telling you this, that, and the other about why their trust is better, which is what typical sales is. Mine is better because it's mine. We truly, honestly do believe that ours is the best one on the block. As I say, we applaud you for making the decision to work with us. But now, as Jim says, it's your turn. You need to step up to the plate and learn the trust. And I know many of you have. Many of you have are very, very good students. You take good notes from these calls. You listen to these calls repeatedly. Jim can tell when people have been on the website. And that's become very, very active in the last, year? Is it how long it's been, Jim? A year or more than that?
Well, we've had this website about 3 years, the new version about 16 months. And, lately it's been getting a lot of traffic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So anyway, as I say, we applaud you for making the decision, but we encourage you to do your part by reading the trust and learning what it's all about. That's why the website is there. And I have a hand raised. Okay. Well, good morning, Dean. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Carol. It's a good lesson again today.
Thank you.
I've got a problem with the Spendthrift clause. Is that a part of the trust that, you know, I was reading in there that in certain cases it might not be valid, that we have to request a valid Spendthrift clause?
When the trusts are created, they do not include the Spendthrift clause unless you specifically ask for it. And in the case of those of you who already have your trust and you now think it would be a good idea, let me know, and we'll take care of it. I'll write you another minute. And we will be putting that on the website as well, if not already.
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
One other thing is the quantum financial system. We're getting close to that being in effect. When that goes in effect, should we consider interest rate on the mother load?
I don't have that expertise. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome. Anything else? And also, as far as adding the spendthrift, you can also add the bloodline clause if you don't already have it. And they are on the website, aren't they, Jim?
They are. And they're also on our new site, which we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Well, that's the end of our hands raised for the moment, so why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Well, we've had some issues lately, and not to point any fingers, but some people just don't write very well. And we can't read half the stuff that comes in some of these applications. And then we've even got people where they'll take a photo with their cell phone of the application, send it to us, and we got to blow it up to be able to read it, and it's just not readable. And lately we've had a couple of people from one of the other states that have some names we can't really work well with. And we're just having a disaster of a time with some of these names. We even had a couple of people misspell their own children's names lately. So we need to make sure that we can read these things. So we have finally got our website up and running. And we're going to have to, we're just going to come around and say it. You have to use that website. We're not going to process your application. It's on a website. You just simply fill it in, push send, and then we'll take it from there. And then we'll make arrangements to call you for your credit card information. We're not going to put it on the web right away, but we'll probably have it there by the end of the month or end of next month. We're still working on that part of it. But we need to get these applications that are legible. And we've been running into this problem. I've had to redo 5 or 6 trusts because people, I can't read their writing. And I call them and I try and explain them over the phone, and they still misspell the names. So we've had that issue way too much. So we figured, you know, we need to get the application done properly. And on the application page, it has a spendthrift clause, and it also has the bloodline clause. And you get to pick those. You just tick the box if you want it added to your trust, and it's added automatically. So we're going to start doing that from now on. And we're going to put it on our website, where to go. There'll be a link on there. But just for your information right now, it's the number 3, the lowercase I, the word trust app, 3itrustapp.com. 3itrustapp.com. 3i obviously stands for Indicator Information Institute. So 3itrustapp.com. And then you have a selection of a whole bunch of different applications that you can fill out. So you want to add to that, Carol?
No, I think that's perfect. You know, when we designed our original application, we made it in Adobe Acrobat so you could fill it in on your computer, and which is typos, misspelling, you know, reading somebody else's handwriting is one of the biggest reasons we did that. Well, unfortunately, a lot of people just still go ahead and print it and write it in by hand. And as Jim says, it's sometimes very, very difficult to read handwriting. So we have chosen to go this route. So we will be able to read what you want, and we'll get it all done. It's just a matter of us copying and pasting it into the right database. So if there's a mistake in spelling one of your kids' names, it's your fault, not ours. But we do our best to keep it as straightforward as we can. And you know, it's only 12:30 or half past the hour, and I don't see any more hands raised. I'm surprised. Jim, we must be doing a really good job.
They all just said, that's just too much. We're going to go have a cup of coffee. I don't know.
Yeah, really. You never know. So I don't really have anything in particular to talk about further than this right now. Do you?
Well, no, but what I think I can do here is I'm going to go to our website, Indicator Information Institute, real quick here, and it's already loaded. That was quick. So I'm going to add something new here shortly. I'm going to add a link at the top is going to say, how do I do, dot, dot, dot. And there it's going to be just a little smithering of, like, how do I get this notarized? How do I do this? How do I do that? Just a little snippet of stuff and links to the other part of our website that will drive you there. So this how do I do, dot, 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 should be up by probably tomorrow afternoon. And that was one of my goals to get done by today, but just didn't happen. I've been kind of under the weather this week. I took a little 3-day holiday last week, and while I was out and about, I caught a bug, brought it home, and it just about kicked my butt. So anyway, so when you go to the website, be looking up there for the new stuff. And I've also got one right now that says new. And, of course, you have to log in to see what it says there. So let me log in. I can't even tell you what it says. And bear with me, folks. As you can hear, I have a mechanical keyboard. And I'm logged in. Okay, this is new. Legal cases, Article 1, Section 10, getting started, next step, and the blog, 10 Big Advantages of a Business Trust. So every 30 days, which is coming up shortly, I'm going to be taking these out of here and adding all the new stuff. So if you go to the website a lot, and you can go to the tab that says new, you can see what we've added. It will be linked over to the standard, like, legal cases. Legal cases have always been there, but we added some new cases to it. So you can go to that place, and you see that we added some new cases. So we're going to try and make this a little easier so you can keep up with it. Rather than you trying to flounder around and figure out what we added, you'll be able to see it every 30 days. We thought that would be kind of an interesting way of doing it. And then in our resources, we only have one right now. That's for book sweepers. It's bookkeeping services for high net worth individuals. And there's a little ad there for that person. And if you have anybody else that has a professional service that benefit everybody else, let us know. We don't charge for that ad. We're just trying to get you some more information out there.
Exactly. We do have one more caller here.
Good.
Okay. Hey, Danny, how are you doing today? Danny, are you muted?
I was. I confess. Anyways, my question is one. It's off of the out of the trust. It was curious. I'm reading that. If I lend to you, Carol, any money or any, I guess, use of anything, I don't have to charge you an interest rate. I can charge you a nominal rate. I can construct it anyway. But if I lend myself as a trustee money, then I have to pledge security. What is the rationale or the legal, reason why?
Well, neither Jim nor I wrote this trust. It's been around for a long, long time, and that was in there when we got it. But the security can be as simple as a promissory note.
Let me jump in real quick. It's to avoid self-serving. There's a clause in law that if you have something like this legal instrument and you do it like your private bank, you treat it like a private bank, that's self-serving, and it invalidates the trust. So you can, like she said, you can use a promissory note. You can actually pledge one of your certificates as collateral. There's all kinds of things you can do. It's just designed to avoid the self-serving clause of the law, so you don't use your trust as your private bank, and it's only there to do that to shelter for immoral, illegal, unethical practices. That's what that's about.
Okay, I see. That's even better than what I reason. But, yeah, okay. That's important because you don't want to look improper, I suppose, right?
Not at this financial level. No, you don't.
No.
Right.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's one thing we want to emphasize right now. You need to be squeaky clean. You need to maintain all your paperwork. You need to do your minutes. You need to do your enemas. You need to really be thinking about, okay, this is all about my future. Don't mess it up. So you need to make sure your paperwork is pristine at all times. I've said many times, I have a whole bunch of binders, well, actually they're notebooks, on my shelf. I should take a picture of that, put it on my net. I think I will. Anyway, I have all these little notepads, and they're all labeled by the individual trust. Every time I do something for that trust that week, that day, that month, I make an entry in there. I put the date, make a handwritten note, I sign it. Now, I sign it because if I ever get drug into court, they'll show that I was cognizant I did it at that time. Now, I don't have a witness to it, but the court will accept it. Trust me on that.
Right, it's like a veil, right? It's like the corporate veil, or it's that, I mean, I've been privy to people who have been, had their entities busted or broken because they failed to upkeep the veil.
Right, right. It's really not so much as the veil, it is the preponderance of business. You have to show that you have a preponderance of business, you have a preponderance of doing the legal, ethical, moral way of doing business. That's all this trust is about, is to keep, is, you know, we don't need a trust to do a lot of the stuff we're doing. But how do we prove what we're doing if we don't have it? It's just a physical way that says these are the outlines of what I'm going to be able to do, and this is the outline of how people can hold me accountable, and this is the outline of how I'm going to conduct myself as a professional. That's really what it does. So you have this document that outlines what you can do. You have this document that outlines what they can do to you if you don't do things right. It's just a way to take the ethics and morals and put them into perspective in a written document that you're going to conduct yourself in a specific manner. That's really all it is.
Wow.
You know, the public has to be aware that you are using a trust. That's why anytime you create an artificial entity like a corporation, you have to put corp, inc, whatever.
Right.
You have to tell the public what you're doing. You
don't, maybe this is what they mean by being of substance.
Exactly.
I don't know.
That's why most of us have the word trust behind the name of the trust. They need to know what kind of entity. They need to know whether it's a personal entity, a fictitious entity, meaning a corporation, LLC, or a partnership. They need
right.
to know what it is so they can decide to do business with you or not. That's what that's all about. It's for mm-hmm. making sure that the public is aware of what you're doing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
Yeah. Anybody else? Have any questions? Charles, I see you're on the call. Do you have any questions today? No, I guess not.
Mr. H?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. H, don't be bashful.
Okay. Well, Dean is back. Well, hang on a second. Okay. Dean, you're up.
Carol?
Yes.
On, well, what Jim was saying, the little notebooks that he keeps on the shelf and keeps every day up-to-date information in them and what's happening, how often would he take that to his minutes in the trust? I mean, do you do that daily also or?
No. Okay. Good question. Love it. Great, Dean. I'm glad you asked that. Let's make that perfectly clear. These are my notes to me. You know, at my age, my memory is not the best. So I need to keep track of some of this stuff. So I do it that way. If I do something like buy a car, well, I'll put some notes in there, but I also make a minute. So I have these notes to create the minute for my actions as trustee. But the notes are so I've got a document that I can take to court to prove my mindset when I did a transaction, that I was doing it for this purpose, that it was, you know, a cognizant choice, that I knew what I was doing. It's just something I created years ago, and it served me well in a couple situations. So it's just a way for me to keep track of everything my business is doing for trust. Not only that, remember, I lost my closest friend this year, John Newell. He was working with us, and he passed away unexpectedly February 29th. Excuse me, 21st. And he didn't leave very good notes. And I've been in a situation that I never thought I'd be in because he was in this business with me and he just didn't do what he said he did. And so I had to kind of recreate everything from just buying the slips of paper, things on the computer, to find out what his intent was for his heirs. I pretty much got it figured out. But I want to leave behind when I pass on my legacy and my intent for all the things I want done with my money and my estate. And that's where these notes come in. They can look and say, well, this is what he thought, this is what he said, this is what he wrote. They'll get a pretty good idea what my intent was, and they can carry forward. How's that?
Thanks for that clarification, Jim. I appreciate it.
And one thing to add to that is having your triple play in place.
Yes.
Also gives whoever is left after you are, gives them an idea of what you want and regarding your health and the disposition of your estate.
Yeah, just make sure you sign the dang thing, get notarized. John did not. He had a brand new one. We both got them done, and then he neglected to get it signed and notarized and passed away before it was done.
Wow.
So, but you got to be really, really on top of this stuff, folks. You really do. And this is, you know, it's something that's going to pass down through generations. Like I keep telling you, this is the foundation of your future. Spend a little time figuring out how to make it work for you. Your family will love you for it.
Any else, mine, Dean?
That clears it up. Thank you, Carol.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. And, okay, Rob, you're up next. Rob?
Yes, Carol and Jim, again, fabulous job you guys are doing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And you mentioned about getting a team from the bank of attorney, CPA, wealth managers. Can we trust the bank that, you know, we're getting, you know, top-notch people that has our best interest, or are you going to refer us to professionals?
Let's start with, you know, the bank is not your friend.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
They're in business for themselves. But there are all kinds of trust management companies out there. You should be doing some due diligence, maybe on the internet. They won't talk to you now. You don't have 38 cents, and they know you after a couple questions that you don't have 38 cents. You'd be able to vet some of those companies. I mean, there's so many. Right now, Wells Fargo is working with Abbott Downing. I think B of A is still working with Merrill Lynch. Chase is probably J.P. Morgan. That might not be a real good idea right now. But there's any number of trust management companies and wealth advisors that you can find on the internet.
Okay.
And they will have a whole team of people to help you.
Okay.
Now, I want to add to that. I will assure you, once you go through the process at the bank, you won't have to look very hard. They'll be all over you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, and that's when you're going to be able to turn the table on them. Because right now, if you don't have, like she said, 38 cents, they ain't going to talk to you. Well, guess what? You didn't talk to me where I really, really needed you to set this up. So guess what? Now I'm going to really, really, really negotiate your fees down.
Right. And you need to vet whomever you're going to work with. It's just like you're in a new town, you're going to find a new doctor. You're not going to go to the first one that you see. You're going to probably get suggestions from friends. And if you don't like the first one, you're going to go find a second one. Same kind of thing.
Okay, so, but also when we go to the redemption centers, are they going to have teams there or not?
From what I have heard, there will be representatives from, like, Wells Fargo, like Abbott Downing for sure, because they're Wells Fargo and HSBC work with Abbott Downing. So there will be representatives there. The other major banks, I don't know. Probably. I think any major bank that's involved in the exchange will have representatives from their wealth management divisions.
Yeah, I would imagine you'll see B of A and Chase, Wells Fargo, HSBC. I don't know if you see very many credit unions, because most of our money will exceed what a credit union can handle.
Yeah.
So. I don't know.
Anything else?
We have third bank or something like that on the East Coast is very pretty good size.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I think it's tier two bank, isn't it?
I don't know. You'll probably get tier ones, all the tier ones, and probably some of the tier twos. will be represented one way or another at the exchange. I would guess.
I would agree. I would agree.
But not credit unions.
Yeah. Now, credit unions just will not be able to handle this kind of wealth because one person would end up owning the bank, the credit union.
Yeah. Which is an interesting thought.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. So, okay. And I think you mentioned before it will be whatever, heavily guarded. We could more or less trust and feel confident about driving there. And see, my thing is.
Yeah, it's security. You need to be mindful of your personal security. From what I have read, they will be following us, probably with drones, to and from.
Mm-hmm. And you know, my thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm there. Geez, do I give them all the currency up front, or gosh, should I hold a little bit back just in case and something happens, or whatever.
That's an interesting thought. And I have thought about
all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. Here you go. Here's everything. Uh-oh, something happened, and gone.
Well, you got to make sure whatever currency you hold back is going to be valid in a year or two from now if you want to wait that long. And, we don't know that much about the longevity of the dinar. I have a pretty good idea about the Vietnamese dong. It's been around a long time. Don't know that much about the Chinese, whatever they're going to call the new currency. Of course, we know about the Federal Reserve notes. Nobody likes those things. And hopefully they're going to go to the U.S. note, get away from that. I don't know. I had thought about that myself, taking, a million dong and just putting it in my safe and forget about it for a couple years just in case. It's just a thought. What do you think, Carol?
We've played around with the same question. And Rob, you bring up a really good point. What if something happens and then we've waited, we're here, we're finally there, and it's all gone? From what I have read, if you do hold any back and you do go to exchange at a later date, you won't get the same rates you got when you exchange initially. It'll probably be lower, but who knows? You know, I've got a friend who's not even planning on exchanging right away. He thinks the rates are going to continue to go up. Well, that's his choice. It's like anything else. If you feel better having a little insurance of having, as Jim says, a million dong in the safe, then do it. You know, it's your personal insurance that, okay, if something happens, I still have this. And even if it's only worth a nickel, that's all we expected it was going to be worth to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you'll have something.
Okay. Can you expand on the dong, Jim, that you just mentioned?
Well, the dong, the Vietnamese dong, has been a valid currency for decades. I mean, you could be able to buy it for the last 2.5 decades. Hold on a second. Excuse me. So I buy a lot of that. Buy mine from AAA. You know, AAA is a travel agency. They sell you currency. And as far as I can tell, when I go there, they buy it from a bank and they give it to you, and the bank doesn't know who it was purchased by. So I go there to AAA. I got, it was cheap. It was under $50 a million last time I bought it. And you have to buy $200 worth minimum. So that's 4 million dong minimum that you have to buy if you do buy the dong. But it's worth it. And so that's why I've been buying it. I kind of feel that nobody really knows I'm buying it there, unless now everybody here on the program knows that, but that's okay. And I think it's going to be around for a long time. And I think since it's already traded daily, you can buy it from the banks anyway. That's the best one to keep as an emergency backup for me.
I would agree.
So if you want to buy, if you have the premier membership at AAA, there's no fees. They just, whatever it costs them is what they give it to you for. If you have just the basic membership, it costs you $15 per transaction. So I have the premier membership because I got junk for cars. And so I thought it would be a good deal. And then when I found out that I could get the stuff with no fees, it paid for itself. As many times as I bought Dong this last year, it actually, the car paid for itself.
Yeah. So. And, you know, when you live out in the boonies like I do, there's no AAA office close by. I've been buying them online through Travelex. They're very, very easy to deal with. They take credit cards, and they deliver priority to you, to your door. And it's either priority or express, one or the other. So you get it in 2 days. A good thing to think about. Jim, you mentioned something about you buy it from AAA. AAA buys it from the bank. Therefore, the bank doesn't know who it's going to, which is good for your anonymity. A lot of people have been talking lately about Wells Fargo was going to be sending out emails. And people say, well, how do Wells Fargo know? Well, Wells Fargo doesn't know how much currency you have or what kind of currency you have. Nobody has kept track of that unless all the currency dealers have sold all your names to Wells Fargo, which I seriously doubt. So early on in this whole waiting game, there were a couple groups that were formed. One was General 64. And I know a lot of people signed up for General 64. General 64 was absorbed by the so-called Wells Fargo group. In my opinion, the people that are going to be getting emails from Wells Fargo are the people that belong to the Wells Fargo General 64 group initially. But banks do not know at this point how much you have or what you have. So if you're waiting for Wells Fargo to give you a call because you have currency, I wouldn't hold your breath unless you belong to one of those, either General 64 or Wells Fargo group to begin with.
And to add to that, is that email address you gave them way back then still valid? Mine would be.
Yeah, good, true. Good point. A lot of people telephone numbers as well.
Yeah.
Good point. Anything else, Rob?
Jim... in your opinion, you still think that, or Carol, that the dong will go the same day, same time as the dinar, and what, any different range of the dong, or your feelings, both of you?
Well, we hear it's going to be in the basket, and there's a basket, supposedly of six currencies, this is one of the six, so it's going to go at the same time. And the rate, I've heard anywhere between 25 cents and $2. So we just don't know. I think, again, it's going to take, when you get there, you'll be able to negotiate depending on how much you have and some of the things that you want to do with the money. And I think you can get a pretty good rate. I don't know if it'll be $2. Hope it is.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been hearing. Carol?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, I've heard anything between 47 cents up to $2. It's been sitting at 47 cents for, I think, about a year and a half.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. You know, that 47 cents, that's a lot. That's, what, $470,000?
Yeah. Yep.
And you paid $50 for it?
Yep.
That's not a bad return on your investment.
Heck of a deal. Heck of a deal.
That's correct.
But we do have a couple more callers here.
All right.
Okay. Are you done, Rob?
Yes. Thank you, Jim and Carol. Greatly appreciate it. Wonderful.
Charles, there you are. Charles?
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Hello, Mr. H. How are you doing?
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
I'm better today.
I'm glad you're feeling better. You guys were doing such a good job until a lot of questions that I was thinking about, people were asking, and he was doing such a good job until I almost forgot mine. But one of them that I wanted to ask, okay, I know the trust is a private entity, but let's say I go in for the exchange, and I know the abstract is to be sufficient enough for the bank to do whatever I need done. But if they tell me that they want to see the whole trust, at that point, would I consider going to another bank, or would I consider them going beyond what they're supposed to go beyond to, you know, I'm giving them what is supposed to suffice them for the transaction. But if they go beyond that and they're just serious about seeing the whole trust, what point, where should I go from there?
You know, in my opinion, they should only need the abstract and the EIN letter. I mean, that's all we have ever needed for, I don't know, what, Jim, the last 15 years?
Yep.
Something like that. However, this is obviously a little different scenario. My plan is to show them my abstract and my EIN and have a copy of my trust in my briefcase. Should they desire to see it, you give it to them. I will not offer it unless they absolutely demand it.
But you would let them see it if they ask for it.
Yeah. I mean, I've already made a copy of it. It's in my briefcase.
Okay.
I'm not bringing my original, obviously, but just a copy of it.
Let me add to that. The interesting thing about human nature is questions. Whenever you start asking questions, people get defensive, right? So the first thing I would do is say, well, I need to see the trust. Really? And for what reason? And they, whatever they say, I don't care. Are you an attorney? No, not an attorney. Well, then how can you make a determination? So you put it back on them like, okay, you want to see this thing, and where is your expertise in this? What are you going to be able to discover by reading it? Are you an attorney? Do you have the capacity to say yes or no as a layperson by reading this trust? If you have the capacity to do that, then I need to move up a couple notches. Can I talk to your supervisor? So if you start asking questions, don't do it rudely. Start asking questions. As your protector, you're protecting the trust. You're protecting yourself. You have the right to ask questions. You don't have to give them anything until you're satisfied with the answers to those questions. And don't be intimidated by them and ask to see their manager.
Okay.
I mean, go off the chain of command. I just yesterday had a situation. Well, it's a long story short version. My father passed away here a while back, and there's some money left that he owed to Wells Fargo. And they have attached my name to that money. And now I find out yesterday that it's now being in my credit report.
Oh, no.
I was not happy about that. So I called the company. And I already sent them a copy of the death certificate. I got the green card. And I warned them. I says, if that's on there in 10 days, you will not be ever be talking to me again. You'll be talking to the judge.
Mm.
And I will sue them. And I can guarantee you there's a lot of attorneys that will take this case. So you have the right to ask questions. You have the right to confront your accusers. You have, you know, like in a court of law, you have the right to make sure that the person that's asking for the information is qualified. They don't know what a trust is. Why would they want to look at it? And what are they trying to find out anyway? So I'm just saying you have the right to ask questions. You may not want to, but you have the right.
Well, you adjusted me on how far to go. Because I know, you know, just as Carol was speaking just now, it is a different type of event, and I wanted to make sure that I wouldn't go beyond the point of if they're going beyond where they're supposed to go. I didn't want it to make it seem like if this happened, because it's quite a bit of money, and if I'm doing what's required of me, why do you need to see more than you need to see? But you cleared it up, and now I know exactly how far to go in a friendly way. But I know now. I just wanted that. And the other thing that I was going to ask was the promissory note and minutes. Okay, the promissory note is just the action that was done, and the minutes tell that it was done. Am I correct?
You're referring back to borrowing money from the trust and securing it with a promissory note?
Right.
Yeah, you write a minute for it. Yeah. I, Charles H., you know, a trustee, wish to borrow X amount of dollars from this trust. here is my, or a regular meeting of the Board of Trustees, it was noted that trustee borrowed blah, blah, blah money from the trust, the promissory note is attached or something to that effect.
Okay. I'm just practicing what I've been doing.
Okay.
I'm like that. I'm glad you guys challenged us to do more research, because the more research I find out, the more you get into it, the more things start to come to you that you wouldn't have gotten if you hadn't been digging a little deeper. And then it poses, you put you in a position where you can ask questions that'll take you up to another level. That's what I'm doing now, is just getting scenarios, just going through some motions. And when a question come up in my mind from me digging, that's what I do. I ask from that perspective then. But you guys are doing a phenomenal job. I appreciate
it. Well, thank you, Gerald. We appreciate that.
A lot. But I thank you. I'm going to back out on that note.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. I have one last thing I want to add, because Charles reminded me of something. How many of you, well, don't answer this, but I'll just put a question out. How many people realize that you can have a president in your trust? You know, let me tell you why I say this. There's a clause in there that allows you to have a president, secretary, treasurer, so on and so forth. They're hired guns. They're not part of the trust, that you hire these people. Well, you can also wear that hat.
Absolutely.
And what's unique about that is when you say, well, I'm a trustee, you know, it's like a dog. Their ears go up, their face turns 45 degrees, and they look like, what? You know, but if you say, well, I'm the president of the organization, they don't bat an eye. Oh, congratulations, president. You know,
yeah.
That's good to know. You don't have to use the word trustee all the time. You can use the word president, or I'm just the treasurer, or I'm the secretary, or I'm the vice president. Let me get back with you because I got to talk to the president. You walk out of the room, you have a conversation. Me, myself, and I had a meeting, and yes, the president being me, the vice president being myself, we had a meeting and we agreed. Okay, go back in and tell them what you thought about doing. You know, realize that sometimes it's you know, it's to your benefit to use different titles.
Absolutely. And, of course, if you do decide you want to be one of those people, you should write a minute, say, you've decided you're going to be the acting president.
Exactly. Well, you want them in for everything you do, and that's
yep.
one of the better ones to have. And
exactly.
You don't have to use it all the time. You can use it in certain situations. For family, especially.
Yeah.
I've got a cousin that I know as soon as he figures this out, I'll be getting visited. And I'll have to tell him, well, I'm just the vice president of the company. I mean, I have to get with the president of the company and meet with these people. So I'll bring it up.
There you go.
Meet him, but you know, I'm just the vice president. I don't have a whole lot of power.
Now, see, that just helped me again, because for terms that people can relate to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can relate to it, and you just helped me again. Put this in my note. Write a minute if I'm going to assume that position. Correct.
Frankly, I'm assuming all of the positions. I'm going to assume president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer, so I can use them any time. And I've done that already.
Interchangeably, absolutely.
Any time I want.
Yeah.
I'm
so
not lying.
Write a minute for each one of those positions that you
know.
Nope.
No.
1 minute for all.
The Board of Trustees hereby has a meeting and decided that Jim Knox, the trustee, has also decided to become the president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer of the organization. And this is hereby confirmed by the Board of Trustees. Now you have all four titles, you have five titles. Trustee, actually six. Trustee, executive trustee, president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. And you can use them anytime you want. You're not lying, but they have a limited capacity. You don't have to disclose that. The president can only go to the Board of Trustees and propose to the Board of Trustees. He can't make a decision unless you give him certain powers. And when you do that, you're waiving the power of the trust, which is not advisable.
I got it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Oh, Jim, we have two more callers. You up for that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, hey, Daphne. Haven't spoken with you in a long time.
I know. How you doing?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hi, Jim. Thank you. I just wanted to make note of a couple of things. You mentioned earlier, someone mentioned earlier about holding the currency out or whatever. I just have to make sure it's a viable one, like you said, especially the dong and maybe the Indonesia rupiah that already have currency in circulation. But we don't know too much about the dinar. There's a length of time they say about that, possibly 2 years, but don't take my word for it. For it is something you might have to just investigate. But one of the things that people might consider is opening a multi-currency account. HSBC does have this, possibly Wells Fargo. But that way you put the currency you have in that currency account. So if they have the Vietnamese dong, you open up an account for the Vietnamese dong. So when the currency changes or whatever, whatever happens with the United States part of it or the U.S. dollar, the currency that is in the Vietnamese dong, you still have your money. So it's something that people might want to research. I can't give you any information on that because I'm not an authority on it, but that was just some information that I heard about, and it's something that people might want to consider doing. Okay.
Good idea. Thank you.
Question on that, though, is the currency still... If the currency account is in dong, is it still held as dong? I would imagine from your way of saying it.
Yes. Hold it in the currency that you put it in. Just make sure that the bank or whoever you're dealing with does have the multi-currency account for that currency.
Perfect. Well, thank you. I didn't know that. Good to know.
You're welcome. And the other thing is that people are asking about the rates and things. When you go to the bank, you ask them what is the rate on the screen and ask to see the screen. There's a front rate, front screen and a back screen. And the front screen is probably the lowest rate that they want you to see. The back screen is the highest. So ask for the highest rate that they have.
And from what I understand, if you ask to see the other rates, they have to show them to you.
Yes. And remember that you know more than they do for the most part.
Absolutely.
You've been studying this for long, and they've had some training, but they don't have the in-depth training that you've been going through all these years or months or whoever, you know, you are, how long you've been in the game, to know what you know from that. So even if you just know a little bit, just been on a few calls, you still know more than they do. But don't go in with an arrogant attitude. Just go in, but don't go in asking, well, can you do this for me? You're in authority. You're in charge. Know what you want when you walk in that door. You may not have the information about the rates, but hopefully you will before you go in. You want to have an idea of what it is. You also may want to create an Excel spreadsheet so that you know how much you have when you go in there. Some people, older people, have gone in and been ripped off way before this even becomes valid. And their money has been stolen from them. So you want to be very careful and turn your calculator sideways so you can get those digits on there if you have a smartphone. Okay? And I think that was probably the last thing I wanted to say, which is something new that Jim said about all of those positions. My goodness. We get more knowledge every day. And we want to thank you for the time that you, both of you, and Judy has been on there with us to help us get this information. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Daphne.
You're welcome.
Okay. A few minutes ago, I saw a hand raised for, let me see, area code 510. Do you still have a question, area code 510? There. Are you there? All I see is a last name. I think your first name is Linda. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I was wondering if you said that certified.
Can you speak up, please? We can't hear you.
Anything in the minutes have to be certified?
No.
Mm-mm. So what did he mean have to be certified?
Jim?
I don't remember saying...
No, I don't recall hearing certified either.
Well, I was saying that I have these the minute books that I carry with or keep with me in case I end up going to court, that the judge would look and say, well, this is handwritten. And it's not like it came out of a computer he just created yesterday. He stated it. He signed it. We can do forensics on it and figure out how old the ink is, which they've done before. And all I'm saying is that is something that the court would say, this is certified information or evidence that this decision was occurred in 2012 or 2016 or something like that. I think that's what I was trying to say. It's the court will accept the handwritten documents over a computer-generated document because they can't tell when the document was generated by the computer, but they certainly can figure it out if it's handwritten. And okay. Don't use pencil. Use ink, blue ink.
Okay, I got you. All right, thank you.
You bet.
You're welcome. Okay, and Rob had another question. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, Carol and Jim, once we hear about it or once it goes, is it best that we get in right away, or shall we be one of the last ones to go in?
I don't want to be the first in line, but I don't want to be the last one either. I would say relatively quickly. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I would agree. Get in there as soon as you can. We've heard the rates will go up slowly. They will be going up. We don't know that to be true. There's no way of knowing, Rob. The thing is, we just don't know what we don't know. It's my favorite expression. We don't know what we don't know. It's kind of like I got in this thing over 10 years ago, and we're still not there. And we were thought, wow, man, within 6 months, we'll be done.
Yeah.
And he promptly called my husband and me and said, you got to do this now because it's going to go in a week.
Oh, wow.
You know, but, you know, they were right. It'll be done within 6 months. We just know which is 6 months.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And also, and I, you know, just like you just said, you don't know how it's really going to go, but do you have any educated guess how many days or weeks or months that we have to...
Well, I heard something yesterday that I wasn't going to share, but I'll just tell you that I don't have any way of validating this information other than the person that told me. I feel this would never lead me astray intentionally. But there was a rumor that said that the ZIM's only going to be available for just a couple days, 3 or 4 days, and then they're going to shut the ZIM down until January, then do another exchange in January because they didn't want to swamp the market. Now, I don't know how that would work, but that's what I heard. And if you think it through, that does make a little bit of sense that they may want to step this thing for the next 5 or 6 months or year to let the market breathe as we inject all of this money into that. And the other thing that I heard from the same person is definitely going to have a jubilee, which if you don't know what a jubilee is, it's where all the debts that you owe are now negated and all the debts owed to you are now negated. And if you think it through on that, that's really the only way this system will work if we're going to go to a whole new financial system. They've got to get rid of the old system. You know, the Federal Reserve and the IRS has to go away because they don't function inside a new system. Remember, with the Federal Reserve, you don't have money. You have currency.
Right.
It's not even evidence of money. It's just currency. What is money? Gold and silver. So, you know, whatever that's, some other country wants to declare it to be, but, you know, it could be bottle caps, and they can make it, bottle caps could be currency or money, but you know, that's not likely to happen, which gives you an example of what to expect. There will be certain things that will be declared as being money, like maybe crypto. We don't know. But that being said, coining a famous phrase, we don't know where we're going to go with this thing. We've heard a lot of rumors. This is the latest rumor I heard. It has some merit to it that maybe they will step this up, do some exchanges now, wait 3 months, do some more exchanges, wait 3 more months, do some more exchanges. And I guess we don't know how the system's going to work. We don't know how this new banking, we hear about this quantum financial system. I can't tell you what it is. I've not read anything on it. I mean, I hear a lot of rumor, seen some stuff on the internet, but I haven't seen any real bank documents. Exactly.
Nor have I. I've read that we're on it already, but I've not seen anything to prove that. And going back to your question, Rob, I have recently read that once the 800 numbers are out, we'll have 45 days to exchange.
Oh, 45 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, you know, take everything as rumor because nobody really knows.
I know. I know. Just rumors. Nobody knows. We've never experienced anything like this before in our lifetime.
And we never will again.
Yeah.
Goes to the famous expression, rumors of rumors.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Anything else, Rob?
No, that's it. Just a fantastic job again. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And, you know, go RV and.
Exactly.
Forward to it. Yeah.
Well, even we're over time a little bit, we still have two more questions. So.
We'll take them. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, me either. Daphne, you're back.
Yes, just a quick statement on this. We were talking about when you go into the bank, is we only really need the abstract and the EIN information. I know that people you're saying they want the whole trust, but like you say, they don't need that information, and I wouldn't leave them a copy of it either. Also, the fact that when you get in there and you start going through your process, if there's something that you don't like or you don't understand and somebody's trying to force you to take this rate or whatever, pick up your currency and walk out. You have that right. You can go to another bank or another financial institution that would help you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good plan. Okay. Danny, you have another question? Danny, are you still there?
I am.
There you are.
Just a quick question. I've been in situations where I've actually opened accounts for trusts, and it's odd because the person who's handling the process, they're all different. I imagine in this situation with this exchange that they've been schooled, coached, and, you know, informed. But in my past experience, they have asked for the trust, and their reasoning is their attorneys need to review it. So, you know, it comes to kind of a, you know, in order to open the account or change the account, we have to see the trust. We have to have it. Others have just said, yeah, the abstract is fine. And it's different from people to people, institution to institution, odd as it is. So if you carry a copy of the trust, would you be prepared, or would you be prepared to prefer to walk to provide them with the trust for their legal department, or would you just walk?
Well, you know, I'm involved in a private group, so I don't know that I have really have the option to walk. Jim, what do you think?
Well, that was going to say, if I have the option to walk, and it depends on the attitude and how they structure the reason. If it's well, we need our have our attorneys review it. Well, get one in here. You know, now. Do it now. Otherwise, I'll take my business someplace else. And, you know, if they're going to be that way, well, you have the right to challenge them on it. Okay, is this attorney know contractual trust? Is he schooled in common law? Does he understand that this is based on the Republic, the original organic constitution?
Right. Rule of law, right. Right, right. Not statutory trust, which is what they're schooled in. They don't understand.
Right.
They understand statutory and not, you know, contractual trust more than
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Thanks.
No, thank you. Well, Jim, it looks like we are done.
Well,
so,
I got one thing to say.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm not going to let you one-ups me. You've one-ups me now for 3 weeks in a row, three calls in a row. I have my own 800 number now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I got my big boy pants on now.
Okay, would you like to give us that information?
Sure, I'll bail out first. This is Jim Knox. It's been a pleasure chatting with everybody today. I work with Carol on these calls and other things. Remember, 3itrustapp.com is a new site. We'll be on our website by the end of the day or maybe no later than tomorrow. And the best number to get me now is 866-341-6907. And I live in Salem, Oregon, so it's West Coast time. I work between 9 and 6 Monday through Friday. You can call me on weekends if it's an urgent situation or if I've left a message for you to call me back. Otherwise, leave me alone.
Yeah, there you go. All right, thank you, Jim. Before we go, just one quick reminder. About 8 weeks ago, we introduced a special pricing program to make it easier to purchase a trust. The special is now over, as are our old prices. Our new prices reflect about a $500 increase across the board. So new trusts are now $19.95. So that's about it for today. Again, Jim, thank you for your assistance as always. Thanks to all of you for your attention and participation. We will be back in a couple of weeks. We don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. Enjoy your weekend. May it be a blessed one for all of us. My name is Carol Worlieth, 877-333-5018. info@indicatorinformation.com. And I am in the Central Time Zone, and I also work between 9 and 5, and I like to spend the weekends with my husband. Thank you all. Have a great week. See you soon. Bye.